welcome to this Physicians Weekly's podcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles. I'm your host for this podcast, and today we've got some great interviews as usual.
This is Physicians Weekly.
Welcome to episode 129. In this week's episode, we have Dr. Alex McDonald, a family and sports doctor from the Kaiser Permanente in Southern California, and he's a regular on the Physicians Weekly podcast. And he's going to speak today with Dr. Erica Rajaravan. She's a family physician and medical director of a Community Care Plus Aldi based in Davis, California. So what do they talk about? They talk about trauma-informed care and how our practices really need to shift the focus from what's wrong with you to what happened to you. They talk about a trauma-informed approach to care, and which acknowledges the healthcare organizations and care teams, which need to have a complete picture of the patient's life situation, both past and present, in order to provide effective healthcare services with a healing orientation. Adopting trauma-informed practices can potentially improve patient engagement, treatment adherence, and health outcomes, as well as provider and staff wellness. And they talk about all of those different aspects. It can also help reduce avoidable care and excess costs for both the healthcare and social service sectors. It's a really important topic, very interesting, and they bring up a lot of great examples of things that have happened in their practices. Enjoy listening.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's Physicians Weekly podcast. I'm super excited. I'm always excited for our guests, but I'm very excited for this guest. We have Dr. Rajaravan, who is a family physician from Northern California, and I'm going to let her introduce herself because I'm never good at these things. So, Dr. Rajaravan, thank you so much for being here. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex. It's nice to be here. Hello, everyone. I'm a family physician like Alex, and I'm the medical director at a community health center in Davis, California. And I do primary care here for all ages, so newborns to all elderly at all ages. And I also teach medical students and residents here. And I completed a primary care psychiatry fellowship while being a physician well-being certificate course. I was a year-long AFP training. And that has sort of led me to taking on a leadership role within the organization for trauma-informed, resiliency-oriented healing care and physician and staff well-being, provider and staff well-being. Yeah, and I also serve some of those roles in the county on the trauma-informed network of care, Yolo County, and the Health Council, and that has sort of a lot of these same similar themes.
Wonderful. So you are clearly highly qualified to be talking about this issue with us today and help educate some of our listeners and educate me too. I didn't know you did a primary care psychiatry fellowship. I've known you for years. Anyway,
so I did. It's UC Davis, UC Irvine. It's just super fun.
Wonderful. Well, let's start with kind of the basics here. What is trauma-informed care?
Yeah, trauma-informed care is really an approach to care towards our patients, but really also in our organizational culture that takes into consideration that trauma and toxic stress are really, really common, both amongst our patients, but also amongst our staff, amongst ourselves. And it realizes what the effects are of trauma and toxic stress on our health. And that is both physical and mental health. And the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, developed principles of trauma-informed care to sort of describe what that means. And there are things in there such as safety, transparency, trustworthiness, empowerment, voice choice, as well as cultural, historical, and gender issues. And that sort of frames what the considerations are around trauma-informed care. And there's some that use an additional principle that is called strengths-based or resiliency. And we really like using that because that's where the sort of extension of trauma-informed care into trauma-informed resiliency-oriented healing came from, to really highlight that aspect of focusing on strengths and resiliency as part of this.
So it's not just sort of patient focused, but it's sort of staff, physician, it's sort of the whole healthcare team, regardless of who that is. It's not just about sort of the patient focus. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And that's why oftentimes we no longer say also trauma-informed care, but trauma-informed approaches. And that just takes into consideration that all of us are humans as well. And these things do not stop with our patients. They affect all of us.
Yeah. And now, did a lot of this kind of grow out of sort of the adverse childhood experiences research that occurred? I think it's been probably almost 20 years now. I mean, I'm not sure if all listeners are familiar with that, but basically the adverse childhood experiences, the number of sort of bad things that happen to kids when they're younger are directly translate into health outcomes as adults, and whether or not they're treated for those adverse experiences, be it physical, mental, psychological, you name it. Is that kind of where some of this work came from, or did this kind of come de novo more out of the sort of the physician wellness realm?
No, I think trauma-informed care has been around for a really long time. And certainly what we learned around adverse childhood experiences and the original study at Kaiser quite a few years ago, that certainly is part of that. Mm-hmm. And I think but trauma goes far beyond the 10 original adverse childhood experiences included in that study. We have now in California, for example, when we ask about adverse childhood experiences, we have an expanded questionnaire that's called the mm-hmm. PEARLS tool that asks about other forms of trauma that are more like in the community and racism and bullying and things like that. Also more social determinants of health related questions that can cause trauma. And then it also, trauma-informed care also is in regards to trauma experience later in life. Adults mm-hmm. also experience trauma. And so I think it is absolutely what we know and learned about the health effects of adverse childhood experiences is really central to this. And it also includes a wider bucket of how we treat each other and mm-hmm. what affects our health.
And that's a great sort of groundwork to grow from. You mentioned sort of the PEARLS screening and questionnaires. And so how does this work and the trauma-informed approach translate into practice, I guess? What are sort of some concrete examples you can give us?
So I think the first thing that I want to mention is the principle of universal precautions. Mm-hmm. And what that means is this is not sort of a care approach that is reserved for a few unique patients who may be severely traumatized. This is really an approach to care that we apply to everyone who walks through the door. And like I said, also to each other and ourselves. So we may not know someone's history. And so we always just assume that there could be a trauma history or a toxic stress history, and that we take that into consideration and treat patients accordingly with these principles of trauma-informed care. And that is sort of a key issue in that is how do we create safety and trust mm-hmm. That is really core to trauma-informed approaches. And it's also really at the heart of family medicine, what we do in primary care, what we have always done. And also trauma-informed care really names it and puts intention behind that and behind the importance of building those trusting, safe relationships with our patients. And it can really include little things such as learning while creating a safe environment for patients, like not slamming doors or really being very mindful when we do physical exams, how we ask patients if it's okay for me to mm-hmm. touch or to lift a shirt, ask for permission about talking about certain topics, or even with more sensitive exams, but just be very mindful of informing patients, giving patients control, empower them to say something if they want exams to stop, things like that. And then it also goes much further into all of what we do, what we would consider sort of patient-centered approaches. Again, asking for permission, giving patients control, empowering them to participate in their care, in their decision-making, building that trust, being transparent. All of that goes into trauma-informed care. And then again, how we have implemented it in our organizational practice is, again, going over to the organizational culture piece of that right. that affects more of the staff, the physicians, and a piece of that we sort of hold near and dear to our hearts is called collective care. We all talk a lot often about self-care, and there's a lot of cynicism, especially also amongst us physicians around that. Like, how are we asked to go and, you know, spend all this time doing self-care when really there's no time or no energy or all of the above? And so what we consider collective care is creating this environment where we help each other out to create the space and the energy that we can take care of ourselves and each other. And that has been a core piece of this trauma-informed approach on the organizational level. And there's this physician, her name is Sandra Bloom. She created the sanctuary model many, many years ago. And one of my favorite quotes comes from her. And she said, "Trying to implement trauma-specific clinical practices without first implementing trauma-informed organizational culture change is like throwing seeds on dry land."
Interesting. I like that. I like that a lot. It makes me think about, like, the, I don't know if you are any social media fans out there, but Dr. Glockenflecken, there's a skit he does about, you know, do you have to do your mandatory wellness module when you have no time to do your mandatory wellness module, right? And so I think I like how this approach really thinks about the individual and how it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to reach out to somebody else to ask for help. It's okay not to be okay, I guess. I think so many of us as physicians feel like we always have to be perfect and, you know, leave all of our emotions and all of our trauma at the door when we come into the clinic. And that's just not possible. We're all human beings. That's kind of a core piece in my mind to this trauma-informed approach, just to being a part of the medical team. We're all humans. We're all here together. And we're all not perfect.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. And I think being trauma-informed really means, like, acknowledging these things in ourselves first and being well. And I think then that is really important in this approach.
Yeah, that's great. So what can doctors do if they want to start incorporating more of this into their practice, into their care, into their clinics, into their organizations? Where can they go? What can they do? How can they kind of get started?
So I would think there's probably three buckets to look at this. And the first one, like we just talked about, is sort of the organizational culture change and work environment. And then the second one will be staff education, physician education around this. And then the third one is our interactions with patients and what we talk about there. And, you know, I think when we talk about the organizational change, you know, just downloading the principles of trauma-informed care from SAMHSA and looking at them and just start to think about how this applies to your organization. Like, does everyone on our staff feel empowered? Do people feel safe enough to speak up when they see something? Is there transparency in communication? Do people ask for what they need? How are the power dynamics? And power, I think, has a lot to do. We talk about being empowered, but power dynamics, especially in healthcare, are often really pervasive, that our staff, you know, may not feel safe speaking up, you know, or we may not feel safe speaking up towards people who are higher up in leadership. And so all these principles can be a really good starting point to start to reflect on some of these things. And then the staff education, we can talk about, like, resources of where to go. But I think there is a lot of just starting to talk about this, saying, hey, this is a thing. We do realize trauma is really common. Toxic stress is common. Healthcare is a stress-inducing system. We work within an extremely abrasive system that is sometimes trauma-inducing, definitely stress-inducing at the very least. Mm-hmm. And so starting to help everyone be knowledgeable about the effects that can have on our physical and mental health, on our physical and mental health, as well as our patients. And then the third bucket in regards to what we do with patients, you know, just start talking about it, you know, read up about it a little bit and just intentionally start naming it when patients bring things up commonly around trauma and stress, and just naming that is a common experience and that, yes, that does influence your life. It does influence your care. And there's things you can do about it to help you build resiliency, to help you heal as well. Those are really important conversations. And just listening and acknowledging these experiences can be very, very powerful.
Yeah, I think sometimes we sometimes forget that as physicians, we get so busy in our day and we're already an hour behind in clinic and we sort of just kind of are rushing through things, which are for us are very, very normal, right? You know, doing a physical exam, listening to heart and lungs, even just laying your hands on a patient. For us, that's completely normal. But for an individual as a patient, that can be very triggering in some situations. And I think sometimes just sort of stopping and being like, hey, can I examine you, right? And something as simple as that really goes a long way, or asking some more kind of open-ended questions. Can we talk about your sexual history? Can we talk about your weight? Things like that, which I find some patients kind of have challenges with. And asking that permission just completely changes the dynamic in terms of the power differential in the room.
Absolutely.
Rather than asking a question, say, can we talk about X, Y, and Z?
Right, right. And being really mindful about that on our effect. And that's where it comes in again, that we really need to care for ourselves first and, you know, to attach our own lid when in the busyness mm-hmm. of clinic. I don't know if you've if you're familiar with the brain in the hand model from Dan Siegel. It's a really cool model that I think that I recommend Googling is The Brain in the Hand by Daniel Siegel. He developed that as sort of saying, you know, our wrist is the brainstem, and then we fold in the thumb, and that's our emotions and our emotional middle brain. And then we fold over our thinking brain. And it's really easy to see that when we get stressed, we flip our lid. Our thinking brain gets detached from our from the rest of our brain, and we really cannot think clearly, and we are stressed, and any sort of stress can get us into this flipped lid state. When we are in a patient encounter and our lid is not attached, we are feeling stressed, we're feeling rushed, the patient will sense that, and we are not going to be our best selves to be really mindful of what's going on and what the patient's experience may be.
Brain in hand, I like that. What do you say to doctors who are like, this is silly, I don't have time for this, like, all I need to do is I just need to take care of patients. Like, this is not something I have time for. This is not something that is on the onus of the physician or even the healthcare team. Or like, I don't have time to ask them about their trauma that then opens a can of worms, which makes a 20-minute appointment into 30 or 40 or longer. Like, what do you say to those physicians who are having challenges?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the reality is that whether or not we like it or whether or not we acknowledge it, the influence of trauma and toxic stress is still there. It's still extremely common. It affects a majority of our clients. It affects a majority of us in some times of our lives. And so really, sometimes it'll actually save us time, and it'll actually get faster to the issues that are really going on if we can just name what's going on and what is important for the patient, and also help patients make these connections with the stresses in their lives and how that may be a barrier to some of the other health struggles that they're struggling with. And so I think, you know, we can say like, oh, I'm not interested in this, but it's right in front of us all the time. And naming it actually is also powerful for us as physicians.
I would imagine also ignoring it can actually make it fester and make it worse also by not acknowledging it. Your kind of example made me think of a story. Like when I was a resident actually and still in training, I had a patient who came in like multiple times in a row for all these like vague complaints. And then finally, I kind of got to the issue dealing with anxiety and depression and a divorce, right? And had I just sort of been more in the moment up front and kind of acknowledged that or explored that more, it could have saved like 3 or 4 office visits where they were prescribed multiple things which they didn't really need, right? And so to your point of yes, sometimes it takes a little bit longer, but you sort of invest in the beginning and it's ultimately going to create a better relationship and a better quality care and a better health outcomes in the long run.
Right, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, I also just had, you know, recently a young woman in my practice who was in her 30s and who told me about childhood trauma and said, well, you know, I recently started talking about this with friends and they told me I needed to let you know about this. And this was our second visit together. The first one was for a fracture and this was for fracture follow-up, but basically said, well, you know, I'm just wondering if I'm really going crazy. And so we went into this whole conversation around you know, no, this is real. What you're experiencing is valid. And there are things you can do to help with the stress you're experiencing from some of your childhood trauma. And she basically said, I just wish that we'd had this conversation 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. She said, I wished I did not wait for so long to see someone, or I wish someone had asked me about it sooner. And I think these stories are really powerful and happen all the time. And people do want to talk about it. And yeah. And I think one other aspect I really want to, when someone may feel skeptical about the importance mm-hmm. of this, is we do, all of our organizations, we are more and more investing into DEI work and JEDI sure. work. So justice, equity, and diversity, inclusion. And there is no DEI work without trauma-informed approaches. Mm-hmm. That just cannot be separated. We are considering all the cultural, community, generational traumas, trauma from racism and inequity. We have to utilize trauma-informed approaches, and those are inseparable. And so if we want to do DEI work, we have to use these approaches. Same thing for like physician wellness. It's like mm-hmm. talked about so much, burnout, staff, healthcare worker burnout. We cannot do that without considering trauma-informed approaches. And so that's another reason for me that I would say, well, unless you're also not interested in any of those things, then right. you should really maybe take this into consideration.
Yeah. And I do like specifically that aspect that, again, we are humans, and in order to build our own sort of resilience, and yes, to your prior point, healthcare is broken in a toxic culture and a system, right. But there are things we can do individually to sort of build our resilience so that we are able to sort of better survive in the toxic sludge, if you will.
Right. Well, and yeah, and we can help, especially if we are in positions of leadership, we can help mm-hmm. change organizational cultures that will be conducive to this collective care. And so we each get more space to build our resiliency and build each other's.
Wonderful. So you mentioned a couple things already. Like, are there any specific conferences? Are there any specific books? Are there any specific places that you would direct people, and particularly physicians for this audience, who want to learn more, who want to kind of engage more in this work and bring it to themselves or to their organizations?
Yeah, so the SAMHSA actually has published quite a few things around this topic. One that I recommend is the SAMHSA Practical Guide to Implementation of a Trauma-Informed Approach. There's another couple like publications that are very practical in terms of how to apply the principles of trauma-informed care in our practices. And just for sort of more background information, I also highly recommend watching Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris's TED Talk on ACEs, on adverse childhood experiences. She was the California Surgeon General for a few years and really did tons of foundational work of raising awareness and building work around adverse childhood experiences. Couple books that are really great is the Bessel van der Kolk's book, But the Body Keeps the Score. Very informative around how trauma and toxic stress affects us. Or Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey have the book, What Happened to You? And that actually reminds me, I don't remember that I mentioned it, but I think one really core principle in all this is to move away from asking what's wrong with you towards asking what happened to you. And that's where the title of this book came from, is really not wondering, you know, when patients are a little aggravating to us or our staff members are not doing their work or our children, to really just take a step back and say, not what's wrong with you, what we really want to ask, but say, huh, I wonder what happened to you. And then the ACES Aware.org is a website that came out of the California movement that has a training. In California, physicians have to complete this training in order to bill for ACEs screening. It takes a couple hours, but it's actually, even if you're not in California or you're not planning to bill for ACEs, it's a very informative, well-done sort of interactive training to the topic. And then lastly, I would say if you were interested in how this all connects with physician well-being, I really like the publications by Dr. Ty Chenefeld. He did a lot of the research and work around physician well-being, including the business case for this, of why we all really need to be interested in that. So highly recommend those as well.
Awesome. I love that. What happened to you versus what's wrong with you? I love that.
Right.
It makes makes me think of Ted Lasso. Don't be judgmental, be curious, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that same concept, right? So, well, this is wonderful. We could go on and on, though we try to keep these podcasts pretty short and high yield. And you've provided just a wonderful wealth of information and a starting place for hopefully folks to learn a lot more. Last question, which I always end with, what makes you most proud to be a physician?
You know, I think I'm most proud to be part of my patients' lives and to care for them and their families and really build these trusting relationships over time. And it's just, you know, thinking about this, it's such an enormous privilege we have to witness other people's lives in such detail with so much happiness and so many challenges and also sad things. And it really makes me proud to be a witness and also to feel that that is a responsibility for me to also advocate and contribute to bigger systems changes to help our patients and our staff thrive.
Wonderful. That's such a great note to end on. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Stay tuned for our next episode as we are joined by top thought leaders to discuss the latest groundbreaking research presented at this month's top annual medical meeting. Physicians Weekly is produced in collaboration with Medicom Medical Publishers and Physicians Weekly.